Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of Banking Reinvented. And today I'm being joined by Arun Ramamurthy, our very own head of commercial banking. Arun, it's a pleasure having you in the show finally.
Thanks, Tim. It's long time coming, I guess.
It's been a long time in the works. So even having you here in the office physically in July didn't allow us to record a podcast episode. I think we were both very busy with all the work that we had in front of us. But now we're finally here. So very good to have you in the show once more. Maybe before anything else, Arun, a little bit of background, let's say in your commercial banking, let's say career, if I may, that at least gives a bit of a sense to the audience on who you are and what you're bringing to the table, also for your dialogue of today.
Yeah, for sure. So I joined Backbase a year ago, so I've been leading the effort in terms of us supercharging our commercial banking and kind of pushing that into primarily on the U.S. market, but globally we want to become a really big player on commercial banking. Prior to Backbase, I've spent like nearly 25 years in the commercial banking space. If it's funny when I look back, when I started my career as a programmer, COBOL programmer of that, and then I've been spent most of my life working on building solutions for commercial banking with two providers prior to this, focused on Asia Pacific for some time, but predominantly on the U.S. market. I would say the last 18, 19 years, I've been very much focused on the U.S. market, building out commercial banking solutions for the U.S. market.
There we go. It's great to have you on board. And also today in the episode to share your perspective on where this domain is going and what transformationally is actually happening today and why that's the case, at least European on those matters. Now, before we get started, I'm going to reintroduce what is happening in the current space. Before we start the episode, I think it makes it a way more interesting episode. And I think you have one item to share, which you believe is relevant to the audience.
Yeah. There's an interesting thing that's happening recently. Chase, JP Morgan Chase, recently announced that they are going to charge fintechs for accessing their data. It's an interesting problem for fintechs because we've seen a boom in terms of fintechs, and especially when it comes to commercial banking, there is a lot of disintermediation happening. But the key challenge that comes up is fintechs, once they are being charged for data access like this, what does it mean to the end user in terms of using that particular data? The fundamental question, I think, we have to answer, we as service providers, we as, even as banks, what needs to be answered is, who owns the data? I think that's a very easy question in Europe. It's a much more nuanced question in the States. Fundamentally, a client can actually argue that, hey, it's my data, it's my account information that's sitting at Chase or any other bank. I could choose to access it in any which way that I want. If I'm authorizing a third-party provider to access the data, who is the bank to actually charge me for that one? But we have seen that across the board on so many other services. So it'd be interesting. I'm watching this closely to see how it develops, because it has a direct impact into commercial banking. Fundamentally, because commercial banking runs on data, and how quickly can we synthesize data and how can we provide real-time information is key for a commercial banking solution. So for somebody on the corporate side that is looking for all of this information, what is the cost that they're willing to pay for that real-time information? That will be interesting to watch. So I'm keeping a close eye on that one.
Clearly. And again, very impactful also for the commercial banking domain, of course. So certainly we'll also play this back in the future episodes if we learn more about this announcement from one bank at this moment in time. So let's see what happens if more follow. But nevertheless, kicking off the episode on the commercial banking side, Arun. Also, it's beautiful that you've been in the space for a few decades, because one could argue you know, digital has always been there in this domain as well. But why is it now that it's more transformational than ever? Or why is the transformation needed more than ever right now? What's your view?
I would start with something which is really interesting in terms of the demographics. So what is happening is we've been talking about transformation for quite some time. But what is happening right now is, if you look at it, we have the Gen Z, and even like the millennials and the early part of Gen Z that is actually coming into the workforce. We have always said that, oh, there is influence of the personal experience in the commercial world, in the work side of banking. But I think the new generation of people that are coming into work is actually saying, why is banking so outdated? They are pushing for that change to happen right now. So that's the, in my mind, that's a very important aspect. The change in demographics in terms of the workforce is pushing a very important change that is coming up. So I would say client expectations are changing fundamentally. That's essentially one aspect that's coming into play. The second one is, banks were not challenged in the past. This was work for the people that were using it. So they were comfortably providing what the banks could provide. They didn't have somebody externally that was challenging them. The competition was banks. Right now, you have fintechs that are in play, which are challenging them. There is statistics which says that in literally 5 years' time, that business is going to be almost close to $300 billion. Can you imagine that the fintechs as a business is going to be $300 billion in terms of their market potential? That's just unbelievable. Nobody could have imagined that 15 years ago. So that is becoming a key competitive factor for banks, which is forcing them to change. The third one, which I think is really hurting them, is the cost of servicing. Right? The cost of inaction on their side is not necessarily not going to benefit them. They really have to actually act. The cost of servicing a client, especially with using an RM, it's now becoming cost prohibitive. They have like, 55% or 50 to 55% they're paying more than what they gain out of that. The fact that it takes them nearly 16 weeks to onboard a commercial client, which means that they are leaving possibly $30,000 per client on the table just by delaying that onboarding experience. I think all of these factors are adding so that there is a sense of urgency among banks to actually transform. So very quickly, at a very high level, if I were to summarize, I would say, one, the client experience aspect of it. Two is the fintech that is coming in, non-bank financial institutions coming in and disintermediating. And then the third one is the cost of doing the business as it is today. I think those are factors that are forcing banks to really think about transformation right now.
And now one can argue you're on the vendor side or the partner side that delivers technology, so you want to create a level of urgency. But how much of this do you actually hear from the conversations in the field or from your own ecosystem that you're connected to?
Oh, a lot. Because whenever we talk to banks, we sense that they have urgency to change. What you also hear from clients is that they are now starting to feel the heat from fintechs, right? I mean, we saw that happening in the retail space, where there is the smaller providers that are coming in and changing how retail banking experience. Unfortunately, BankSimple doesn't exist anymore, but BankSimple, almost like 15, 20 years ago, they went in with a model where they said, look, the retail banking experience doesn't have to be so bad. We can provide you with a really rich retail experience. And then there is a proliferation of a lot of providers on the retail side. Now we are seeing that coming into the business side also. So the banks sense urgency in terms of what they need to do. So every conversation is about how can you get me to a good state very quickly? I'm with an outdated system. I have silos in the back office, but we don't want those silos to affect our client experience. We're being challenged by our clients. So that's coming up in every single conversation.
What would you say is the main hurdle for them to actually make the move? Like, what are the top three items where they know they have to break through, make a big decision, or maybe re-platform potentially? Or like, what are the ingredients that hold them back to a degree?
The one thing which I keep saying to the bankers also is that, look, for the end user that is using commercial banking, it's work for them. So they want to come in, perform something, and get out. So they are looking to actually, how quickly? If they have to come in and do something and get out, and they learn how to do it, even if something is bad. So the banks are not incentivized to actually make the change. But now there is a push where the end users are saying, I'm going to change banks when the experience is not up to what I need it to be. Necessarily what banks are collectively saying, this is what the experience should be. The end users are now demanding that the experience be where I am doing something, I want the experience to be there. So if you think about it, we can actually take this and say, what if banking was embedded into their existing workflow? I'm in an ERP system day in, day out. That's where I run my business. I'm not here. Banking is not my business. My business is logistics. My business is communication. My business is retail. Whatever is my, I'm a hospital management system. I'm managing a hospital. So any of those people, for them, the fact that they need one person sitting here and managing the banking relationship, I think that in itself is a key challenge. Now they're pushing to say, I want banking where I am. So from a bank perspective, the fact that they didn't have an incentive to move forward, that incentive has gone away. Now they have to act. So the first hurdle, which was like, the clients were not demanding, I think that is gone. But now the bigger challenge is silos in their back office. Right? How do they break those silos and how do they provide a rich experience for the user so that they can excel with their banking experience and the client can actually not think about it as banking, think about it as part of their business and just continue with it and keep moving.
So it's way more the embedded or fully integrated capability of banking at the point where it matters. That's a little bit the vision that I'm hearing through the lines here.
I think if you think about it, embedding into an ERP or a CRM system, in my mind, is just the first step. It's possibly the basic step that you can provide, right? Make sure that data can flow into an ERP system, data can flow from an ERP system into the banking, because these companies are actually having multiple banking relationships. Gone are the days where you wanted something to be, this bank is my primary relationship bank. So this is where I'm going to do all of my treasury management. Treasury management, especially for bigger, mid-sized and bigger companies, it is moved to their applications. They want it to be embedded in their workflows. They don't want to be doing banking as a disparate, separate step that needs to happen. Which is why we are also seeing banking as a service, right? So if you think about it, the evolution of that ERP and CRM system integrations is essentially where we can now, banks that are innovative are actually starting to think about it. What if I got embedded into an application that I have nothing to do? I'm just embedding myself into the workflow so somebody can actually take advantage of my capabilities. So let's say a banking service provider embeds themselves into a logistics solution, and somebody that is running a logistics business that leverages that solution, all of a sudden, all of their banking workflow is running through this bank. They are not thinking about it. For them, it's like, I have to make payments to all of my drivers. Okay, So the bank is actually handling it behind the scenes without even them knowing. All that they need to say is, hey, this is the bank in which I have money. Take that money and process that. So this kind of embedding is actually going to provide banks a lot of advantage in terms of how they can penetrate. We are seeing M&A in the US market, right? There's consolidation of banks. There are more and more banks that get coming together to become bigger. I mean, we saw that. I mean, we've been seeing a lot of them. Synovus Bank, which is a pretty reasonably big sized regional bank that's in Atlanta, so it's a common reference for me, given that I'm sitting in Atlanta. They just announced 2 weeks ago that they are going to merge. $50 billion banks are becoming $100 billion banks. They're merging together and becoming. And the key challenge for them is how do they service a very key component of their market, which is commercial customers. And for them, the scale helps them in terms of innovation, in terms of optimizing on technology. So I think a lot of that is going to influence how banking is going to evolve over the next decade.
How would you say it is transforming high margin services like treasury management, like lending? I'm just wondering how that would eventually re-land up all the way into an ERP, which, by the way, also typically is archaic. So I'm really trying to see how would you piece that together? Or do we assume you have a fully modern ERP in place and, you know, we can easily connect into that system and all of a sudden you've got a beautiful set of workflows there, you can do lending and what have you. Like, how do you see that? Like, how real could that be and what's the timeline, Arun?
Very interesting question, right? So as much as banks are dealing with legacy technology, companies are dealing with their legacy technology. I was talking to a friend last weekend. Yeah, just 10 days ago. And he is building solutions for SAP where SAP doesn't have payment capabilities. In the sense, they don't have plugins into bank systems. So again, his comment was, he's been a SAP consultant for nearly 25 years. And his comment was, oh, if you think banking systems are old, come and look at the corporate systems. They're equally old. So what I think all of us are trying to do is trying to overcome that challenge with respect to how do we leverage new technology and make sure that we can still continue to work with that older system as those are getting replaced. They're not going to happen immediately. For me, the biggest bet is on AI. I think agents can help us in a big way in order to kind of overcome a lot of that silo mentality that we have. How can we do a lot of things? Now, the way that I also think about it is, it's at the end of it, what are you going to provide to the user that is going to make it easy for them to act upon? So treasury management has traditionally been, here's the information, you go do what you want. Now, that same information, even if it is coming from the silos, we can actually build agents on top, which can sit and synthesize the data and provide predictive and proactive information that I can act on pretty much immediately, rather than me sitting and spending like 6 hours, 8 hours on a daily basis to synthesize that data and analyze it and make decisions based on that. By that time, I probably missed a couple of opportunities because this is really fast-paced. So the AI is a key component in terms of how I see this evolving, where treasury management can become like much more predictive and proactive. It has been very reactive for a very, very long time. The other aspect that I'll also say is lending, which is kind of stuck in a old world, especially when it comes to business lending and commercial lending, because on retail, we have moved to BNPL, right? Because nobody thinks about loan as, hey, I have to go to my bank or credit union and actually ask for a loan, get myself pre-approved and do it. Even for the smallest of the small things, you have BNPL, which essentially allows you to buy now, pay later. All of that is embedded into the workflow and it's happening. And I see that evolution happening in commercial banking. And that's going to happen sooner and much, much faster because I think that is going to become a key player in terms of how treasury management overall, commercial lending overall, is going to transform. I think the other aspect that I would bring up would be somewhat bigger, and this one is goes a lot more on a global scale, which is essentially how do we simplify global trade? And some of the things that we are doing on trade finance itself is towards that goal. How do we ensure that trade finance can be simplified? Because it's God, oh God, there's so much of documentation involved with trade finance. How do we simplify that? How do we get that to be easier? What all can be automated behind the scenes without the user getting involved? I think all of those aspects will come into play. And that is essentially going to help us. You asked about timeline. I think over the next, I would say the next 18 to 24 months will be transformational with respect to how AI starts evolving. I think adoption of that would take time. The bigger banks and some of the innovative banks will definitely adopt, but it'll take time for the smaller banks to actually jump into that bandwagon, because a lot of them are in this wait and watch mode. So they really want to see, oh, what is regulators going to say? What are the big banks doing? So they are in this wait and watch mode, but the bigger banks and some of the innovative banks, the new banks that are coming up, they're the ones that are actually going to disrupt on the AI front. And they will absolutely have the first mover advantage. There's no doubt on that front. When it comes to lending, I would say that evolution will take a few more years, fundamentally because it's easier to embed yourself in a retail environment than it is in a commercial environment. I think there is one of the things that I, when we talk about fintech, I mentioned this to banks, because they still have an advantage when they're competing with fintechs. That's fundamentally because clients trust banks with their money. They will trust a technology provider, a fintech, with the technology solution. They are still not trusting them with the money. We trust fintechs with money as an individual, as personal users. We are willing to part our money and give it to the Venmos and the PayPals, which are like private entities. But when it comes to the business banking side of it, the commercial banking side of it, I think the trust is still with banks. So when you think about that aspect of it, the embedding of a lot of these capabilities in terms of the BNPL-like capabilities in banking on the business side, it'll take a little more time. My prediction, and this is just prediction, right, based on what we are seeing in the marketplace, my prediction, it probably will change over the next 36 to 60 months. I mean, 3 to 5 years' time is what I would say.
So trust, in a way, is your strategic moat that will not be, let's say, gone in the coming year. It will evaporate as these other players also get that trust and that, let's say, gravity in the market. Now, you mentioned something interesting. You said, hey, the coming 18 to 24 months, that's the AI transformation where you see it coming to fruition or coming to life properly. Now, in this domain, commercial banking, you also have the relationship manager playing a very big role in clearly managing the relationship, optimizing the type of services they consume, being there for the clients when it really matters. How does the AI transformation play into this? Is it all the way extreme, complete replace, it goes autonomous? Or there's a middle ground where it's human plus AI, but you know, the symbiosis becomes potentially even differentiating because you can service more. What's your view?
I don't believe AI is going to fully replace the RM. I don't. I believe that the RM has a very key role to play in terms of that relationship, which in the past has been more of very tactical relationship. I have a problem with this system. Where is my paper? What is happening with this item? So they've kind of become a to-do list taskmaster where I can actually go to my RM and ask them for a bunch of things. While, I mean, think about wealth, right? If we think about it as individuals on the wealth management space, we go to our relationship managers not necessarily to say, hey, can you find out what happened to that particular transaction? Yes, we do that. But majority of the time we go there asking for advice. What should I be doing? Where should I be investing? what should be my strategy? Hey, I'm getting a bonus. What should I do with that money? I expect that role to change more into that true advisory role that it should always have been. Especially in the treasury management and commercial banking space, the role of an RM is essentially to guide the client in terms of saying that, hey, you're growing. I think this product is very important for you. It's a little bit of selling, but it is also a lot of advising to actually help the client understand what is it that they're missing. In some cases, the clients become overambitious. Guide them. That essentially becomes a key component for the RM as we move forward. And I see AI as a tool for them. Right? AI becomes the, if you can use the Microsoft word, co-pilot, for a relationship manager. They are looking at it in terms of how can I collate information that is relevant for a specific client. I mean, today, anytime that these RMs are advising, many a times they're going based on hunch. They don't necessarily have the data that can accumulate, that they can accumulate and provide concrete answers to it. Especially in the treasury management space, I think it's still where it's based on experience, based on relationship, based on what I think I know, rather than being 100% data-driven. I think AI will become the co-pilot who can actually provide a lot of that information for the RM, who can then service the client. It can be like highly personalized, right? So in terms of looking at it, for an RM to look at it and say, okay, let me look at this demographic, this geography, this size of client, this industry vertical, and see what are the products that other clients are using. If an RM has to do it manually, they probably should be having a team that is actually sitting there and doing all of this. Now, just reimagine that where an AI agent can sit on top of all of this data and churn out that information, which is specific to a particular client. That makes the whole model very, very different, because now you can provide that customized service to that particular client. Honestly, I want them to become the orchestrator of all of the client work with respect to the bank, right? In some cases, you can even extend that to say, will they become not just the commercial banking side of it? Can they also handle some of their personal relationships of those individuals that they are dealing with? Maybe. But it's a question of becoming an orchestrator, a conductor of sorts, to actually manage that whole relationship with the client.
I'm fully with you, but at the same time, I'm also wondering if also compare it to the retail domain, the transformation wave there is, let's say, more mature. It's had its second round almost already when it comes to digital at the very least. And what I've observed also in my decade being in this space is that the change takes a lot of time, even when it was just digital transformation, which was actually pretty clear cut. Like, this is what you need to do. This is the best practice architecture. You just need to move the work to that new platform, let's say, type of architecture, and move your culture, move your structure, blah, blah, blah. Now, the AI transformation right now is going so fast, and it is so big of a shift in how we work, how we organize, and what your mindset should be, that I'm just wondering that, you know, theoretically, I'm fully with you. Yes, absolutely. There will be an RM co-pilot, and it will do all the data, the research, the analysis, and basically bring it to the table for the RM to be successful. At the same time, I'm wondering how fast will they move? If they're the incumbent and they've not been that transformational so far, what makes that difference now when it comes to the way they run the business and change the business? Meaning, isn't there an opening almost for, again, a wave of fintechs that are AI native? They start with AI at the core, at the essence of how they run, and they basically solve for that issue, which probably later down the line, you know, gets brought together once more. But I think also there's a bit of a, we'll have a few fast movers who really go all in and are willing to make the change. And then there's a whole long tail of, yeah, they want to move, and theoretically they've got the answer, but making the real move is more challenging than just running a digital transformation. It's an AI transformation on top. How do you see that?
That will be a challenge, no doubt about it. Because we have seen that challenge even in the last rounds when we were talking about digital transformations, right? I don't want to acknowledge this, but I've dealt with modem-based applications in when it comes to treasury management. So it's I've been seeing this transformation in a long time, right? So I think if you think about it, when the web came in, banks that actually jumped onto the web-based applications, I'm talking about early 2000s, right? Banks that actually started providing commercial banking in the web, they actually scaled much faster and much bigger. And then when mobile came in, the same thing happened, but at a much smaller scale. It changed the way that you started approaching a lot of the commercial banking because the quick actions started moving towards the mobile devices. For me, the AI transformation is very similar to the transformation from modem to the web. You got to do it. I don't think there is an option for any of these banks. Now, the question is exactly what you called out, which is how quick can this transformation happen? It's an existential question for some of the smaller banks. The reason I call it an existential question is if they don't do it, a bigger bank is actually going to come and gobble them up because they are looking for the accounts and they're looking for the assets. So they're going to come and grab them, or they're going to get disintermediated by a fintech. So to a large extent, your bet on AI is also a bet on your existence. So you got to really push towards it. Otherwise, your future is in question.
Wow. That's a big statement. I appreciate that though, because it triggers a thinking process, right? Also, hopefully for the audience listening that is looking after the commercial, let's say, line of business, how willing are you to make that move and basically go all in on this? To at least not get into the situation of a doubtful existence, which it might seem very far out, but at the same time, the pace of change we're seeing across basically the world, but also some pockets of banking where we're, of course, very active, it is astonishing. It's also very exciting at the same time, but it's also incredibly rapid pace of change. Moving to the wrap-up, Arun, I'll just give a few key highlights that I picked up in the conversation, and I'll ask you to give a few more highlights if you would like. First of all, what is the moment in time right now that drives the more significant transformational push that is happening in the commercial banking domain? You mentioned a few things. One, the demographics are driving the change. First of all, the Gen Z, the millennials, they're basically expecting a very different experience to work with, both on the client side as well as on the employee side, and it's becoming real. So that expectation is really pushing the commercial banks to make a move. Secondarily, banks were never challenged. Right? Commercial banks were being challenged by commercial banks. So basically the status quo was upheld by those that hold the status quo. There's external entrants. There's clearly the fintech push that is driving change and that is driving momentum. And I'm quite certain that the conversations you have in the boardroom typically now are also having this subject on the agenda. Like, what's the fintech type of competition moving into your domain, into your patch, into unbundling your value proposition? And lastly, you mentioned cost of service. Cost of service overall, you share it 50 to 55% cost income ratio. Is that sustainable? Probably not. Is it really helpful to continue the growth curve? Probably not. So I think that third element was the one that you called out as well very strongly. And following that, the AI transformation, we just wrapped up that going for AI transformation is actually making a bet on your future. So there's no doubt about it. It's not even a yes or no. It's you practically have to, unless it's your strategy to be acquired, right? So there can be a conscious decision there still. And then lastly, one thing that really stood out is you have the trust as a commercial bank today. And probably to your taste, at least, the coming 4 to 5 year debt will hold true. But also that part will diminish over time if you don't make those moves, if you don't execute to the level of what the market is expecting. Those are my three highlights, Arun. Anything you would highlight or add to the mix before we wrap up the episode?
I think acknowledge the shift that is happening. The shift is as big as the shift from the modem-based banking that was done to the web, if not bigger. So acknowledge the shift. Embrace the change. I think embracing it would give you the confidence to go learn, adopt, and succeed with that one. That's what I would say.
Very clear. And an exciting time ahead. I would say, Arun, you're now, let's say, 1 year within the context of Backbase. We have some big announcements to make very soon when it comes to commercial banking. So I would love to invite you back, also with those customers in particular, to basically bring even more point of view and intel to the table to discuss the topic. So with having said that, I would say thanks for joining the first episode around this topic. And let's meet again in a few months. Bring you back into the episode.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tim. It was absolute pleasure to do this.
Likewise. See you in the next round. Thanks, Arun.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jauke and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.